So even as the rest of the world locks down, you as a public health official in the UK think it's perfectly OK to go to mass gatherings?
I do, for public health reasons. However,
how
from
can there
today,
be a public health reason in telling people to wash their hands every 2 hours, which is the only advice, while you sing Happy Birthday, and then going to a group of 12,000 people all sweating and massing around each other? How does any of that make sense?
I'm not sure where your Masters in Public Health came from, Piers.
Thus far in this series, I have discussed the emergence of the mass corporation and its managerial elite. However, alongside their rise came also the rise of the mass state and a set of managerial elites who came to occupy its functions. These new functions are highly technical in nature and require the application of physical and social sciences, the techniques of administration, and the skills of mass communication, with the ultimate goal of what might be called human engineering. It might be helpful to map these functions into three broad areas, which I have called the civil servant, the spin doctor or electoral guru, and the technical expert. The civil servant operates the techniques of administration and furthermore understands the nature of complex mass bureaucracy and how it works. These include both the likes of Sir Philip Rutnam, here the civil servant who has served under multiple governments in the Home Office, and top diplomats such as Kim Darroch, pictured here. The spin doctor is a master of mass communication, a type of psychologist, both tapping into the popular consciousness, but also helping to form it for purely political ends. Perhaps the most famous of these in recent memory have been Dominic Cummings, who masterminded both the Brexit campaign and Boris Johnson's electoral victory, and Alistair Campbell, who was Tony Blair's master of mass communications for over a decade. And then there is the technical expert, the man of pure science, in whom we are supposed to place ultimate trust. During the Brexit crisis, we saw Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, continually tell us that it would spell economic doom. And currently, of course, we see the chief medical officer, Chris Whitty, on our screens daily telling us about
the science.
Because he's an expert and you don't have a...
Your Masters in Public Health.
And because he has read the...
The science...
The relationship between the voters and these managerial elites is much the same as the relationship between the mass stockholders and the managers who have effective control of their firms. Democracy gives you a nominal choice for this or that politician, but no matter who you vote for, this is what you get, just as mass stockholders can nominally fire the executive board only to find their investment decisions taken by another set of managers. As Samuel T. Francis points out in Leviathan and Its Enemies, equality of votes in the state does not determine the amount of actual power that citizens in the state possess. In the state sector of mass society and in the mass corporation, actual power is distributed according to managerial skills and not by formal equality of rights and votes or by legal ownership. Nor were members of the traditional ruling class or the holders of elective and hereditary office, analogous to the big stockholders of the corporation, able to undertake the managerial functions of the mass state. Traditional elites were generally indifferent or hostile to the new functions of the state, and in any case were not prepared to perform them because of their lack of managerial skills. Politicians who acquired formal office by means of elections were also generally unprepared to undertake management of the mass state. Their principal qualification for office was simply their personal ability to win elections, a qualification with little connection to the ability to perform managerial functions. Moreover, the development of managerial skills for the control of elections, the use of mass communications and public relations techniques of demographic analysis of constituencies and social and economic studies of voting behaviour and of specialised financial and administrative skills in campaign organisations tended to reduce elected officials to dependence on these skills and to subordinate the voting process to the techniques of electoral management. Indeed, the use of such electoral techniques contributes to and extends the power of managerial elites in mass politics and government. The stratification of power in the mass state is thus analogous to that within the corporation. In the latter, power is divided among the managers, the big stockholders, and the mass of stockholders who have virtually no power. In the mass state, power is divided among the bureaucratic managers, the representatives of the bourgeois elites in the elective or appointive offices of the formal state apparatus, and the mass of citizens who have virtually no power in the state. The big stockholders in the corporation, the grand bourgeoisie, have become dependent on and beneficiaries of managerial capitalism. In the state, the members of bourgeois elites who retain formal control of elective and appointive political offices are increasingly dependent on and beneficiaries of the managerial sectors of the state. The dependence of bourgeois elites in the state on managerial elements is seen not only in the rise of professional electoral and political managers, but also in the proliferation of specialized professional staff in the Congress and of the special assistants who advise the cabinet level appointees in the executive bureaucracy. Even when the holders of elective and appointive office are drawn from the bourgeois strata of mass society and seek to pursue bourgeois interests through their offices, their dependence on managerial staff often constitutes a constraint on their inclinations and as a means of channeling the thrust of their activities in the direction of managerial interests. The principal justification for managerial centralization of power and functions is that bourgeois political institutions are too inefficient and cumbersome to solve the problems identified by the managerial elite, and that the bourgeois elite itself is hostile to such solutions because they are a threat to its power and interests. In fact, there is considerable truth in the managerial argument. Bourgeois political institutions were established to protect the localized power bases and private interests of the bourgeois elite and are intentionally cumbersome to prevent the enlargement of the centralized state and its intervention in social and economic processes. The managerial argument against these institutions, however, also serves managerial interests by implicitly or explicitly rejecting the legitimacy of the bourgeois political ideal of a limited and neutralist state, and thus contains revolutionary presuppositions that, in effect, redefine the ends of the state. The managerial justification for the substitution of administration, bureaucracy, and expertise for bourgeois legal codes and judicial and legislative institutions is the claim that managerial technique is able to resolve the conflicts and flaws of human society and to ameliorate the human condition. Thus, crime, war, ignorance, poverty, disease, slums, etc., become problems to be solved by management and its formula of scientism. The application of science to human relations and institutions, and the managers portray the persistence of bourgeois institutions and values as itself a problem or obstacle to managerial progress. The claims of the managers are generalized in meliorist and utopian formulas that not only serve the interests of the managerial elite as a whole, but also exert immense appeal to the mass population. Meliorist and utopian formulas are also contained in what Christopher Latch has called the new therapeutic conception of the state, which regards autonomous social institutions as the sources of social pathologies that must be cured and corrected by bureaucratically administered and scientifically informed therapies that serve to transfer control of the process of socialization by the managerial bureaucracy. The fostering of meliorism and utopianism by the managerial state is thus implicit in its political dynamic as well as in its bureaucratic character and its specialized managerial and technical skills, just as the fostering of mass hedonism and cosmopolitanism is implicit in the dynamic of managerial capitalism. In those areas of society where these tactics of managerial Caesarism have been successful, the result is tantamount to oligarchic domination of society by the managerial elite in the state, even though democratic and constitutional forms have been retained and even extended, the dominion is largely achieved through manipulative rather than by coercive techniques. The substantive but informal establishment of managerial oligarchy in mass society thus parallels the substantive but informal establishment of a collectivist economic order under managerial control that is achieved by the dematerialization of property and the fusion of state and economy. Neither the state nor the corporation would be able to maintain the managerial regime, however, without the skills supplied by the managerial educational organizations and without a large degree of ideological rationalization and integration. Both of these functions are carried out by the third sector of the managerial regime, the mass organizations of culture and communication. And those will be the subject of the next video. Now get out.